The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
So here we are with Captain Spectacular in the flesh.
Hello, Mr. Townsend. Good to meet you here in Las Vegas, the home of many a rogue like myself.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And remember, if you sign up for the automated Talk is Jericho email notifications, thank you so much. And if you haven't yet, what are you waiting for, man? Just go to podcastone.com/Jericho. Get on board. Be in the know. When it comes to this show, we're going to tell you who's coming up, what guests we got coming up, what we're going to be talking about, the topics, all the things we discuss, all the things we chat about. And we're going to send the episodes right to your email as well. So sign up now at podcastone.com/Jericho. Get all the information. Be a part of the TIJ army. Here we go. And so The Rock today is back on TIJ. I'm not talking about The Rock. I'm talking about rock and roll, man. I got a great musician, a very quirky Canadian, and a huge, huge star worldwide who was discovered by Steve Vai. He sang in Steve Vai's first solo record. He also might possibly have some controversial pictures on the internet from time to time that he also caused a little trouble at The Tonight Show with Jay Leno. Wait till you hear that story involving nudity and a telephone. It's not pretty, but it's funny. And that's the perfect description for Mr. Devin Townsend. That's right. He ain't pretty, but he is hilarious. You'll also hear the story about how I ended up playing Captain Spectacular on Devin Ziltoid 2 album and how we won a Juno for the damn thing. That's right, a Juno Award, a Canada's version of a Grammy. We won a Juno together. Devin's also got some great stories about his time with his mentor, Steve Vai, and how he ended up singing at that band, how he quit. It involves him basically throwing Steve Vai's guitar rig down the set of stairs. Lots of stuff coming up. We're talking about the Devin Townsend Project's latest album, Transcendence. Came out last fall, and Devin and his band are on the road in support of that album in Europe right now. They got dates this weekend in France and Spain, then they head off to Switzerland and Germany, and then the U.S. leg, the second U.S. leg of the Transcendence tour, starts May 6th in Philadelphia. He's going out with Opeth and Gojira. What a great bill. You can get tickets for all of his dates at HeavyDevy.com. That's HEVYDEVY.com. That's Devin's website, HeavyDevy.com. Find out the shows, find out the tour dates, get some tickets, and settle on in to laugh your ass off at the very quirky, crazy musical genius and a little bit of a pervert as well. Devin Townsend coming up next.
The Forbes interview from Podcast One just launched with the king of podcasting, Adam Carolla. On February 1st, we're dropping a new show. It's called Forbes Under 30, where we talk to young entrepreneurs, hosted by me, Steve Goldblum.
It's interesting because when you're a creator, that never leaves you. You always have this urge to want to create. Like, it's just who you are. You like the girl from Wreck-It Ralph. She knew she was a driver the whole time.
That's Martellus Bennett, one of our first guests. Who knew this NFL star was also an artist? He's that and much more. Subscribe to Under 30 on iTunes now, and be sure to give us a rating and a review.
Talk is Jericho.
All right, we are in Las Vegas. Two Canadians in Las Vegas, eh?
Hey, how's it going there, Chris? What's up there, bud?
How's it going, bud?
I'm just good. I'm in the backyard working on my car with Larry there.
With Gordy.
Yeah, he's good. Gord's working too, yeah.
Every guy in Canada's name is Gord.
Yeah, and it's funny too, because I don't know if it's the same with you, but it's like when I first started working in the States, my reaction to people that have that idea of what it means to be Canadian,
yes,
it's just always been, I get so frustrated by it.
Right.
You know what I mean? saying? It's like somebody who's got a perfectly normal and articulate way about them will interrupt you halfway through your sentence to say, you said A.
Yes.
And I'm thinking after the second time, it's just, it's not funny.
Are you from Canada? They'll say, because I heard your accent.
Yeah.
Okay, so if I go and talk to somebody from New Orleans, you can totally tell they're Cajun. Do I go,
sure.
So, oh, excuse me, are you from New Orleans? Because I can hear your accent.
Say that cute thing again.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it was funny. It was like the last time I was in LA, like I was working with some guys and they kept, every time I'd say it, they'd say, oh, you said a boat.
Yeah.
You said A. And then finally I was just like, dude, like this is fucking making me crazy, right? But it's my own deal. I've had to get over it, right?
But you never notice how much of an accent we have as Canadians until you go abroad. Because when I was growing up, I never thought Canadians had an accent. And then as soon as you go somewhere else, like, oh, you're from Canada. How did you know that? Your accent is so obvious. And now you can tell.
Can you, though? Can you tell, really?
I think now, like, when you came in the room, now that I know you're Canadian, I can hear your accent.
Oh, really?
But, yeah, I think if someone knows what a Canadian accent is, they'll be able to tell. If we go, like, if we go to L.A. or something, yes.
Yeah.
If you go to, you know, Mississippi, they won't have a clue.
Maybe it's just, you know, it's like that sort of so insular in your own head so much that I think to myself, like, I can't hear anything about the way that I speak that's fundamentally different. And, you know, I got some other buddies that are just like, oh, Canada seems like such a weird thing. I'm like, well, it's a tenth of the population. And, you know, our KFC has corn. And, you know, per capita, there's less Walmart. So it's a totally different culture. Right?
Our KFC has corn.
True.
I used to love these to have corn fritters with honey. And they were only available in Canada. So I'd always get the big, you know, the five piece, whatever it was.
Yeah.
And then the corn nuggets. And you dip them in the honey. Probably heart attack on a stick. But damn it, they tasted
good. You see, and that's why the two cultures will never be able to converge.
Never combine.
That's it, man.
But here's my favorite thing, though, about this. So in Canada, the Canadian version of a Grammy is a Juno.
Yeah.
And I have a Juno sitting on my mantle in my front room, which my wife then moved into our room, which then I moved back into our front room, which we won a Juno together.
Yeah.
Well, let me rephrase that. You won a Juno.
No.
And I was on it.
Can we do a high five? Do you think people would hear that?
I think that was you.
All right.
Let's do it.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah,
that connection.
That was a Juno high five.
Yeah, man.
That was one of the coolest moments when I go to the mail and I open up the mailbox and there's a freaking Juno in there. This thing is huge, man. That was great. We won that for Z2, your Ziltoid album.
Yeah.
Which was amazing.
Can I take this opportunity now to thank you
Please.
For being involved with this? Because someone asked me the other day, they said, how did you get Chris Jericho to be involved with this? And I'm thinking, other than the fact that you're from Winnipeg and we got some mutual friends, my answer to that is clearly, I have no idea. Really. It's like, because you ended up going in because we did the Royal Albert Show, and you ended up going to a buddy's place, and you wore like a cape.
No, dude, it's even worse than that. So let me go back a bit. So what we're talking about here, for those of you who don't know, is Devin did a record called Z2, which is Ziltoid, which is a concept record, which is very, very popular to your fans, and we'll get into the whole thing worldwide, your fans, where I played Captain Spectacular, which was a voiceover. We met briefly at the Golden God Awards in England when I hosted it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always known about you from your music, and B, because you produced Stuck Mojo's second record, Pig Walk.
Correct.
So Rich Ward loves Devin Townsend, always talking with Devin. So we almost had a mutual friend in the first place.
Of course.
And then a couple of months after I met you backstage, I get this email to ask me to play Captain Spectacular.
Well, so here's the Ziltoid thing. For me, you know, I got 30 records full of stuff, dubious quality in a lot of ways, and some of it's not too bad, but the whole idea with Ziltoid is I got sober a bunch of years back and had a kid, and all of a sudden, my love for Jim Henson and the Dark Crystal and all that stuff manifested as this rubber sock puppet alien that in hindsight is probably just a metaphor for sex. But at some point, all of a sudden, I start thinking, well, what's Z2 going to be about? Like, and who's the characters? On the first album, I had this idea of this Captain Spectacular. And then when it came time for the second one, it was like, well, we're going to ramp everything up. Who could possibly be Captain Spectacular? And Chris, I have to tell you, there was never another alternative. And so when I contacted Rich, my first mail to him was, look, this is going to be a long shot because I've only met Chris this one time. But it has to be this way because clearly there's nobody else that can be Captain Spectacular. So thank you very much for being involved, brother.
So then you sent me some lines.
Yeah.
Because by the way, like I was like totally into it. And then then once again, the answer is why did you do it? And I'm like, I'm not sure. Maybe because I probably have about six of your 30 records.
Yeah, wicked.
I remember I was like, in Japan about Ocean Machine. I have a couple Strapping Young Lads.
That's
I have
wicked.
Sex and Religion.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, this could be cool. And so you sent me some dialogue. And I remember I tracked it on my little, on this Zoom recorder we're using right now.
So sick.
And I sent it back to you like, all this is bad. Can you please redo it? And I was like, oh.
Did I say that?
Well, it was not so direct.
Oh,
it was
my
like,
God.
I think because I don't know exactly what I was wanting to do.
Yeah.
And so like, why don't you try this with this? And I have like this kind of this weird British accent. And I am Captain Spectacular. What do you want, Ziltoid? So there you go. So then it worked. And you're like, I love it. It's great. And so you send it off and you never think about it again.
Right.
So then fast forward, I guess, a year later, Ziltoid has become a huge hit. And you're playing the Royal Albert Hall, which for those who don't know is 5,000 capacity, one of the most prestigious venues you can play in all of Europe and all of England, and you've sold the f*** out.
Yeah.
With the Ziltoid show.
Sure, yeah.
Which was huge.
Well, it was great, and it sold out really quickly, and here's the best part about it. If there's anything that underlines what it is that I'm trying to do, and one of the reasons why I enjoy our interactions thus far, and specifically that one, is I just really want everything to be an elaborate middle finger in some way. You know, it's like to be able to take a theme that fundamentally makes no sense and has very limited commercial potential and blow it up to the point where you've got a ton of great minds and interesting artistic temperaments,
mm-hmm.
like trying to find solutions for how do we make this big farting set of testicles like get across the stage between this part and the other.
Right.
And I mean, I don't know, man, and maybe it's just the petulant part of me that won't give it up, but I love the ability to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I gotta tell you, the next thing we're working on is it's like once you get away with it once, it's a slippery slope, right?
See, so. But that's the thing. You have gotten this very rare thing where you can do whatever you want, and you've got a huge fan base that buys into it. And it's all great stuff. But like you said, listening today with listen to Z2, and like it's almost a comedy album. You're laughing in parts at some of the dialogue, like, oh, you're so heavy and yet so cheesy. And it's like you're amusing yourself, which you have this giant fan base that is amused as well.
You know what? Thank you, number one. But I you know, you're saying you're here with your buddy that you've known for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Same with me. Here's my thing that I find the most creatively satisfying with all this is I've got a bunch of really good friends, and a lot of them are people that I've spent many years with. You know, I've been married for so long. I mean, I like commitment. I like long-term things. You know, we're running a marathon and not a sprint.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a result of that, how these creative things happen is everybody gets together, drinks a bunch of coffee, and it always starts with, wouldn't it be funny if...
That's great.
And that's it.
Yeah.
And also on a side note, hearing you do the Captain Spectacular voice is so good.
I listened to today. I was like, wow, that wasn't bad.
It was so good. But seeing you actually do it, I'm like, oh my God, that's him.
You just hear this. Because it's... And then what you were alluding to earlier was we were on a Fozzy tour last year. I think it was in April maybe or something like this. And they were like, okay, Devin wants you to do some green screen as Captain Spectacular. And I was like, oh, wow. Like, okay, when do you want to do it? Some guy was emailing me. He's like, I'll come to Tampa. And it's like, well, I'm not going to be here. And it's like, I'll be in Manchester, England. We have a show that day. Let's do it then. Yeah. So I had to go to some studio on a show day, which, as you know, as a singer, sometimes
sucks.
You're not feeling great.
Sucks.
And go into this green screen room. It was in the back of a music store.
Yeah, we're budgeting.
Green screen.
Right?
Yeah. So I show up. There's a plastic bag with... open up, and it's like the most generic Superman costume ever without an S on it. It's like blue spandex with the red cape. And I got it. He's like, okay, I have to put this on. Yeah, Devin wants you to put it on. I'm like, fuck, you guys are lucky I like Devin.
It's so good, though.
I'm sure it was amazing. But at the time, it's like, I got to get off the bus at like 11. I usually sleep till 3 p.m. You know how road life is.
I got to tell you, when this interview is over, man, we're going to make out. Because it's like this whole thing is just... And every time you did it, too, because, I mean, I'm sure it's similar with you. It must be that you think, I'm going to throw out there what the ultimate scenario is.
Right.
And if I get 5% of that, we're still doing it.
Yeah,
and that's awesome. And so to meet people, specifically people like yourself, people. We're plural now, I guess. But
people,
you know, both of us, yeah. all of us in the room here. But I mean, you've had an amazing career, mm-hmm. and the fact that when we got the stuff back, I was thinking he's not going to put on the leotard. There's no way.
But of course I am.
But it did.
You know I would.
It was so awesome.
You know I would. But the hardest part was when you gave me the lyric sheet to read. You know, months earlier, I'm reading it off the paper. Now I have to memorize the shit
yeah.
and say it, or maybe I was lip syncing it or whatever it was. But I was like, oh my gosh, this is hard because there's a lot of dialogue. I was there for like 3.5 hours.
Thank you, buddy.
Yeah, no, but
thank
dude, because I was thinking, I actually read in Metal Hammer some of the review of the Royal Albert Hall show.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was like, 5 stars. Oh, it's the yeah. best thing ever. It's the new Pink Floyd, The Wall. It's the greatest thing. So how exactly did the show work at the Royal Albert Hall?
Well, I mean, we had a couple opportunities prior to sort of work out our creative force. And like I was saying a minute ago, my whole trip is a bunch of people that have failed over and over and over to the point where now we are not really afraid of that failure, and that allows us to sort of take things to a level that is maybe perceived as being, you know, way over the top.
Right.
So we did a bunch of shows in the UK over the past prior years. We did the Roundhouse, and we did this thing with this huge, we made this massive vagina, this massive penis that ended up like having this collision, and then there's all these rope dancers, and we had to hire this circus who were like thoroughly confused.
Right.
You know, like at this part here, you guys need to explode through the vagina and then we're going to just chuck a penis at you, right? And they're just like, oh, okay. So, and on that one, we had so many technical hurdles to get over that when we went through it and managed to sort of scrape our way through it and through a bunch of failures, like technical failures, mm-hmm. by the time we got to the Royal Albert, it was just like, oh, sure. Yeah. Okay, well, this time, why don't we have this? We'll have all the risers and these big screens and all this
big
stuff.
Puppets.
That's it, man.
Yeah.
And so the next one that we're doing, like, I can't divulge because it's of such significance what's yeah. happening next. But, man, where we're going to take it from here, it's like, I feel like, again, a petulant 12-year-old. It's like, oh, I got away with that?
Well, what about this?
What about this?
It must be so exciting for you, though, because, and we'll get into how you came into the business, but now, like, over the years, like I said earlier, you've been able to carve out this niche for yourself where it's Devin Townsend. And you know it's going to be wacky, you know it's going to be unique, and you know it's going to be amazing. Because musicianship-wise, let's not forget and never deny the fact that you're a virtuoso. Your stuff is great. Your hooks are great. I'm not just saying that because you're here. It's heavy. It's melodic. It's very much you. How did you get to the point, here we are in 2016, almost 2017, where you're able to just basically do whatever the you want in this world where it's still so regimented on this guy's metal, this guy's rock, this guy's pop? How were you able to get to that point?
Well, two things. First off, relationships, honestly. Mm-hmm. It's like when you're touring and, you know, I work with people that you've worked with as well, and I hear a very similar thing about the way that you have managed to sort of make the hierarchy of your touring crew work, and that is there is none. Really. Mm-hmm. It's like everybody sort of relies on each other to do these things. And I think if you can foster an attitude and an environment of positivity creatively and making sure everybody keeps it in check, you know, I mean, whether or not it's the egocentricities or all these things, then ultimately you're going to have a bunch of people that create a team where the deficiencies are evened out just by the fact that you've got a bunch of different personalities. Mm-hmm. There's one thing. But secondly, it's failing. I know a bunch of people who have never failed, and as a result of that, are afraid to do anything. Mm. You know, I got a buddy that we were going to do like an improv thing together, and he's like, I can't do it. And I was trying to figure out why, and it took me a little while to recognize, well, this guy's been in a band that has never done anything that has been significantly,
right.
like, panned. And so when it comes to just, like, letting it rip and playing notes, it's like there's this veil of, like, I can't allow myself to be publicly humiliated. Mm-hmm. See, I never had that problem because since the very beginning, it's been humiliation and failure and all these sorts of things. But I love doing it so much, and I'm surrounded by such good people that eventually mm-hmm. you're just in this position where it's like, well, what do we got to lose? What's the worst that can happen?
You know, that's an interesting thing, especially when you mention, like, if you go on the road and you have a good crew, and the first thing is that everybody's a good maybe not a good person, but cool. I mean, right. some cool yeah, people yeah. are degenerates and
just
horrible.
Terrible people.
But let the guys do their job. Like, if you have a sound man or sound woman like Lisa, mm-hmm. which I didn't even know she was on the road with you until you sent that picture.
Totally.
Let her do her job. You know she's good. Let the bass player play his part. You do your thing. I find that always works, and it's almost like the proverbial giving the dog a bone if he does something right. Let the professionals be professional, and you'll always have a better team that gives you a better show because no one feels the pressure of like, oh, I'm in trouble.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. And I think that's where a lot of times, specifically if you're running a situation that's rooted around you, you know, Devin Townsend.
Right. It's your thing.
It's my thing. But ultimately, I've learned through kids, I think more than anything else, that what I'm good at, I should focus on. And the things that I'm not good at, the only reason why you would want to control those things is because you've got an insecurity.
Great point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's it. And so now it's like exactly what you say. It's like, let the bass player play the bass. Yeah. You're hiring somebody to do sound or to do lights. I don't do that. I may have like a vague idea of what I'd like to portray, but ultimately by trying to control this sort of chaos, all you're going to do is make yourself mad, right?
I think it's like this in wrestling, and it's like this with a band. If you consider like a great hockey team, because we're from Canada,
exactly.
Or football team, because this is a majority U.S. audience. You put the team together, and if one guy's job is to play one, you know, if your job is just to play the penalty killing, and only time you play is if there's a penalty kill, and you go out there and kill it, your team will win.
Right.
You know, if I'm the center and then I'm skating over the left wing and then I'm skating to the goal and then I'm doing it, you're never gonna do that. You're gonna lose.
Exactly.
Right.
And because, you know, I hang my head in shame because I was never particularly good at sports. I know it might be hard to tell just by yeah. looking at the opposing.
You're a strapping young lad.
You see it,
well,
right?
Strapping middle-aged lad at this point.
Very middle-aged. So here's the thing. Like, I'm going to take that sports analogy and bring it back to something as nerdy as I believe I can portray, and that is Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, man.
Right?
Yeah, totally.
So,
I was a huge Dungeons and Dragons guy.
You were?
Yes.
All right. I was too, until all of a sudden my dungeon master, I was like rolling the dice to see how many times, you know, the orc got because I was like, I hit puberty, and all of a sudden I'm just like, whoa, she's the female orc walks in the room.
You're banging the orcs
20 times with the dice, right?
How does that work? Did you make up your own system for sex?
I all of a sudden realized, you know what? I didn't.
There's no Dungeons & Dragons sex roles.
Well, now there should be.
Oh, there should be.
And now we need to get this happening.
So if you have the 20-sided die and you roll over a 10, then you're lucky. And if it's under a 10, she slaps you in the face.
Well, maybe
with her orc
under
hands.
10, you're like on the bottom.
Yeah, oh, yeah, right.
Okay. Dude, this could be good.
We got a whole new thing here.
Like Dungeons.
Gary Gygax, I don't know if you're alive or not, but if you are, give us a call. Devin and I got some ideas for you.
What would be the name?
Dungeons & Dragons & Dungeons.
Dungeons & Dragons & Dungeons.
It's an S&M thing.
I like it. D&D.
D&D, yeah,
well,
exactly.
Here's the thing. It's like, okay, so my analogy for that, in the same way you're talking about with sports, is you may have a wizard, and he's got, you know, he's the ability to cast spells, but he can't protect himself.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's got a pudding head or something, right? And then you've got the other guy that wields a battle axe and is not particularly good at math, right? But you get a bunch of differential?
That's a good word.
Yeah, thanks.
It is. We're Canadian.
There's a bunch of, that's Canadian for
different.
Different.
Yeah.
Characters in one place, and then the goal is ultimately you get a really strong team, and everybody plays their role.
What was your big guy in Dungeons and Dragons?
Balaric. He was a 16th level cleric. Yeah.
Now, did he live or did he die?
No, my buddy killed him, and it sucked at that point because it was like right in line with the testicles dropping. The whole Dungeons and Dragons episode ended up just ending so poorly.
Terribly.
Yeah, and I was so mad, too, because it was a passive-aggressive thing. You're bringing me back to this.
Well, because I have a retort for you. That's
okay,
why
please.
I have one, too. But first of all, how did Balaric die?
You know, it's such a scarring memory.
Ooh.
I don't even remember.
Well, yeah. I remember every little thing as if it happened only yesterday, and I ain't talking about Paradise by the Diaspora Light, Devin.
Go.
Okay, my guy was Haltane.
Okay.
He was a paladin.
He was.
Which is kind of like a warrior, but more of like a knight, like a glorious knight. And I don't remember what level he was on, but dude, I had hit points on top of hit points. I had treasures and battle axes and magic and spells. I was the shit, man. He came up against a chromatic dragon.
Dude.
Which, if you know anything about Dungeons & Dragons.
I do, and I'm very sorry for your
thanks,
loss.
Thanks, man.
Because that's punishing.
For those who don't know, it's the worst guy you can
ever
get. The chromatic dragon is the worst of the chain of dragons and basically killed me in like three blasts of his fiery breath, where I had like 90 hit points, 60, 30, dead.
Was it your buddy that was doing it too?
Yes.
Oh,
Colin Swanston.
Forget that guy.
From Wordsworth Way.
Out of here, man.
I got a bone to pick with you if I ever see your ass again, you stupid idiot.
Wait till he plays D&D. He's under 10 every time.
Yeah, exactly.
Dude, you know what'd be great is as well is if you could take it to the point where it has like real world ramifications too. So it's not just hit points you lose. It's like your house.
Right, mortgage payment.
That's it.
Kid gets pulled out of private school.
Yeah.
Has to take the bus.
Colin's kid's not a private
wife
school.
Is cheating on you with an orc.
Yeah. You see, if he was the type of guy that would nail you with a chromatic dragon, his kid's not in private school.
No, no, no. Barely making it through public.
Barely.
In the bottom half.
Yeah, he's got a backpack that says anus.
scraping through with a 62% average.
D&D coming soon to a bunch of sad, emotionally troubled middle-aged men near you.
Near you.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand. Talk is Jericho.
Yeah, let's talk about the first time I ever saw you, and it was funny because I see the video for Sex and Religion, the Steve Vai record. It was just Vai. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what was the first video. It was
Deep
called
Down Into the Pain, I think.
Deep Down Into the Pain. That was the song called.
Yeah,
it's called that.
Yeah, don't giggle. It's serious.
Is this real? But the best part was, here's the thing. So I'm with my friend Lenny, and we were watching the Vai album, the Vai video, and you come on.
Yeah.
Bald in like 1992. No one's bald.
Yeah.
Total leather jacket, leather pants. We're like, this guy looks like the Hellraiser guy. We were called, like, Hellraiser is awesome.
Yeah.
Hellraiser is great. So we love the Hellraiser on that record, which would be you.
Well, it was such an interesting experience for me because I was 19, you know, and
that's
was like
crazy.
Dude, tell me about it. I'm 44 now, man.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Nice.
So that's pretty good. Yeah. That's the water. Arrowhead, right, everybody.
There
I
you
highly
go.
Endorse it.
We spiked it.
You did.
Yes.
Now I'm getting to roofie. I'm out.
We're ready for the DD&D live.
I'm going over 10, man. Fingers crossed. So anyway, with the Vi thing, it was like I was 19, dude, and I moved to LA and I had all.
From Vancouver?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Pie in the eye. Like, is that pie in the sky?
Pie in the eye is good too. Like,
I got an eye full of pie.
You're a vaudevillian comedian, apparently. How are you?
Yeah, how are you? God, who wants the pie in the eye?
You got on laughing with...
Okay, I got to finish the story.
Okay.
Chris.
Sorry.
So basically, where was I? Where
were you talking about? You were pie in the eye, pie in the sky.
I was a vaudevillian performer in the 20s.
Right.
I had a hat, and it was a very specific one. It was a velveteen type that only turned types of
and a cane. And we sang
one monocle dripping down from the eye.
So you moved from Vancouver to LA to find your fame and fortune.
I did. And I'm
right.
And
my, at 19.
My idealism was such that when I moved to LA, I thought to myself, well, clearly what's going to happen is I'm going to go here and I'm going to become a big star and everybody's going to really like, you know, my connection to the rain and all these things that I felt like creatively.
To the rain.
I love it. That's the whole thing. Vancouver, man. I write based on the fact that the weather there is such
constantly raining. Yeah.
Moved to L.A. and everything I started writing sounded like Smash Mouth. And it was like, that's not the truth. I love Smash Mouth. So basically,
this is not a cut down against Smash Mouth.
It isn't. I love
any
that,
Smash
man.
Mouth fans.
Right.
Man is well be walking on the sun. There you go.
Do you know that song?
I know
love
it.
That song.
Yeah.
So
they have another one too.
I went down there and it was like, but at the time it was like I loved Vi when I was in my teens.
Who didn't? Yeah. David Lee Roth Band.
That was it.
Zappa.
That was it.
You must have loved Zappa.
I didn't actually.
Really?
Yeah, I liked him, but I always felt like he was you know, and this is a hard. It's actually a hard thing to put across because the Zappa fans are really like serious,
super hardcore.
Yeah, and I mean, I would never in a million years deny his brilliance, and a thousand times more than I would.
No, of course.
I just felt like he used his intellect in a sense that sounded condescending to me.
Mm.
It was more like I'm really smart, and I've got a bunch of really smart people playing with a xylophone here, you know, and really dumb, right? But I think he's brilliant. I never liked the tonalities, but you know who I did like and I loved was Captain Beefheart.
Ah,
because it was a very similar kind of creative
sort of trip, yeah.
But it was oblivious to the fact that he was out of his mind, and I loved that because Captain Beefheart was like, "I'm going to write a pop record," and it's like, "Do do 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 do," and people
like, that's sure, dude. So I like that aspect of it. But when I went down there with Vi, it was like because of the Zappa fans and all this sort of stuff. I just didn't jive with it. Plus, that was right at the time when like Nirvana and Soundgarden and Pearl Jam and like for me, a Godflesh and Napalm Death, and I'd sort of moved out of that kind of guitar centric stuff. And as a 19-year-old, I really wanted my identity to be seen independent of Steve. And so I came into that experience.
Well, how did you get the gig in the first place?
Well, I'd sent a demo to Relativity Records, and they had signed my band to a deal. And because
what was your band called?
It was called Noisescapes. Yeah, dubious. And then because
dubious.
It was, man, Noisescapes, come on. It really rolls off the tongue.
My high school band was Scimitar.
See, that's good, though.
No.
What is a scimitar?
You ever seen Sinbad the Sailor with that curved
that's
sword?
Awesome.
That's a scimitar. And the T in scimitar was a curved sword.
You see?
There you go.
Dude.
That was my band.
I think that's awesome.
Well, it's not as good as Noisescapes.
Noisescapes suck. Come on, dude. I appreciate it.
Future tour, Noisescapes and Scimitar, co-headlining tour.
All right.
Coming to a middle-aged problem child near you.
Problem childhood near you, yeah. No,
So you sent the demo to Relativity Records.
I did, yeah. And then I got signed to that, and Steve needed a singer, so I went down, did the Steve thing, and then
They called you and said, listen, Steve Vai needs a singer. Can you come down? Did you have long hair, or were you bald at that point?
I had long hair. I had that type of hair that Faith No More had. You know what I mean? Where they shave the sides and all that.
Yeah.
And it was only about 6 months after I went to L.A. that it all started falling out.
Oh, yeah, because you had a wicked skullet for a while.
Dude. Yeah, well, and that's also the petulant part as well, where like... Someone was like giving me a hard time about going bald.
Screw you, male pattern baldness.
That's it. I'm just going to grow it. I'll frame it.
But you wore glasses too. You look like a crazy genius.
And it's funny because I look back at these images from 15 years ago now, and I think to myself, like, God, how did someone not just pull me aside?
I had friends.
Really?
Can they tell me?
Come on. Yeah, dude.
Come here, man.
Even my wife. I mean, now I look at her. I'm like, well, why did you sleep with that guy? It was like messed up, man.
I like skeletons. What can I say?
She didn't. I'm mad at her now.
She's just being ignored it.
Yeah.
She ignored it. So did you have an audition with Steve?
No. I just moved there.
What? So you were so great, you just moved there and they said, here's a gig.
Well, that was it.
What?
And it was funny because when I moved down there, I had never auditioned. I had never sang for him. And he just had me come down. And it was like, up to the day that the tracking of the record actually began, I never sang a note for him. And I was so nerved up, dude, like, as you would imagine, because I never considered myself a singer. Mm-hmm.
You were a guitar player at that point?
Yeah, I just started singing because every other singer that I tried to audition was a douche.
Yeah.
Right? So I was like, okay, well, I'll just do this and see if I can do it in tune. And so that was it. I moved down there, and it was like 2 months of just living in L.A. and, like, freaking out about the fact that I know I'm not good.
Mm-hmm.
And then he just kind of had me go in there, and I guess because he had committed to it and because perhaps he liked where I was at creatively or emotionally or whatever, he decided to commit to producing it. And the ramifications of that ultimately led to strapping, I think, because to this day, being told how to articulate emotions is something that just sends me over the top. And that's why even what I said earlier, the rain. The way that I write has always been connected to things that are not technical, like I guess it's synesthesia or whatever.
Great word.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it? It's like synesthesia.
It'd be great on Scrabble.
Four syllables.
You'd beat me in Scrabble.
I'm multisyllabic.
If Words for Friends was still a thing, you would kill me right now.
Well, I think that my undulating multisyllabic syllable. Yeah, no, I'm really good with those, man. I get paid by the syllable.
I feel so lugubrious that you just did that right now.
You don't look it, though.
I
came in, I was
professional.
Thinking,
I'm trying to. Inside lugubriosity is hitting me right now. Yeah.
You know what, man? We amp each other up so much.
We do.
Dude, it's like...
There's a great connection here.
I know, but I keep feeling like we're both going to have like a manic episode. And then I try and like bring it back down. I'm like, oh my God, it's like, it's fun. But then I'm like, oh yeah. But then I think, oh, but Chris has got this big thing. And it's like a podcast with a bunch of people listening.
What's his listeners thinking right now? They still don't understand what Captain Spectacular is.
I know. You got to check it out.
You got to check it out.
Yeah, just download.
Available on iTunes now.
Don't even. Just download.
Okay, for
take
free.
It all.
Go on Apple Tunes.
Buy a shirt.
Buy a shirt.
Yeah.
Go to the Royal Albert Hall if you're in England. If not, then just don't worry about it.
Well, you know what's funny though? Just like change stuff. Yeah, so I did the Vi thing and then I did a bunch of records and it's all
No. But I don't want to gloss over it because here's the thing.
Okay,
listen, this is interesting to me. I'm sure you've told the story 100 times, but never on this show.
Okay,
so to me it's interesting. You're a 19-year-old kid and you move from Vancouver to L.A.
Yeah,
to find your fame and fortune.
Yeah,
very, very, at that point in time, too, is probably 91, 92, maybe 93, I think it was 93. Yep. Steve I, David Lee Roth, Whitesnake, Zappa, his own shit.
Totally.
And you're the singer for his first big kind of solo thing. You get the gig. Do you have a good relationship with Steve? Is he cool to you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but at the time, I mean, I'm 44 now. He was 35.
Right.
Or 33.
And you're 19.
Dude, but I look at buddies of mine now that are 35 or 33, and I mean, it's like he was a legitimate rock star.
Yes.
You know?
Like an iconic guy even back then, right.
And so my perspective of him was two things. On one hand, I thought of him as Steve Vai, the guy that I liked as a teen. And on the other hand, when I first had my interactions with him, there was like a connection that was cool. Mm-hmm. It was like there's a sense that beneath that kind of veneer that the 80s had, there was a guy that was, you know, awkward and very musically astute and, mm-hmm. you know, and kind and you know, awkward. And so I really resonated with that. But then when I went down to L.A., it was one of these things where he was still trying to figure it out. And our relationship now is such that we can admit these things to each other. He's like, dude, I was going through
some crazy stuff. Oh, so you guys are buds now? You know each other? Oh, that's great. Totally. That's cool.
Yeah. But it's like, but he was like, dude, I was going through some crazy stuff. I had, you know, made a ton of money and I was like, I was a kid. And, you know, and so he
was a huge thing, too, because it was the first Vi.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't Roth or Whitesnake or Zappa. It was Vi.
And right at the point where all of a sudden the industry didn't want that.
Right.
You know, they wanted either him to be that or they wanted it to be like Nirvana.
Yeah.
So he had, I think he would admit as well, like there were certain aspects of controlling that ended up backfiring on him. And there were certain aspects of my inability to articulate my discontent that resulted in me, like, taking a dump in his guitar case. Right?
Okay, what?
Yeah. But see, that was it. And, okay, so here's the best part. Here's the best part. So we did...
okay, that's a good guess.
You know what? Well, I had a hard time articulating myself, so I have to go where...
I'm not going to talk to you. I'm just going to dump.
That's what I was like. But and that was it. So here's the best example of that. So we did the Tonight Show.
Did you really?
Yeah, but check this out. It's brutal. So the I'm not even like I just finished a book, but I can't give the specifics of it because the management at the time was this really like famous dude who did not understand me. Mm-hmm. And so we did the Tonight Show, and the day before, you know, they had put me in this thing where I'm supposed to rehearse all these moves and like how do I gesticulate.
Oh, they wanted you to like dance and stuff? Like not dance, but like do the
whole
lead
thing.
Singer shit.
The whole thing, right? And they had me look at like pictures of like Axl Rose and all this stuff. And I'm going, I hate this. Like like this is, and they had, you know, spent like a bunch of money to give me all these big fake dreadlocks that looked really cool and like what was ever was hip at the time, you know, like Nine Inch Nails and all this stuff. But I was like, oh, my God. So the day before the Tonight Show, me and my buddy, who now lives in Long Island, who we're rooming together, who's one of my best friends still, we shaved all the hair off, shaved my eyebrows off, and as opposed to, like, the black leather suit, I went to Walmart and got a pair of gray shorts and a gray shirt and wrote all my buddies' names all over my arms and everything. You'll see it's still online. And we did it, and it was...
Is this on YouTube?
Oh, yeah, and it's punishing because you got like a big band and all that. And I'm like, oh my God, it's brutal, right?
Is this you and Vi? Is it still Terry Bozzio?
No, it was Abe. Abe, he's with like Paul McCartney.
Abe Laborio?
Yeah.
He was with Steve Vai at that point?
Yeah. He did the tour.
And who was on bass?
T.M. Stevens.
Oh my God.
It was great.
That's a band of killers.
Great. So you think on the surface, this night's going to end well. However, as things go, so we were in the backstage area, in the green room area, and we had met everybody, and everybody was really, like, me and Mark were hanging out, and everybody was kind of like, not a peckerhead, but just like, you know, it's just kind of like the L.A. thing.
You and who had met?
Oh, Mark, sorry, my buddy. Was
okay, got
with
you,
Mark
your friend,
Island
gotcha,
guy,
yeah, yeah.
And we were menaced together, yeah. Right? So we were just like, these guys are like, this sucks, you know, and Steve's in a shitty mood, and everybody's doing it, and, you know, Jay Leno, and he's like, how are you doing there, kid? You know, and all this.
Wearing his denim shirt.
So.
Canadian tuxedo.
So Mark goes, we should with them. So we went into the back room, and there's, like, the office there, and the green room, and, like, the phone, all this stuff. And I was like, well, Mark, put your jacket up on the window so no one can see, right? We locked the door, and I took all my clothes off and, like, started doing all these poses all over the thing. And then Mark's like, you should stick the phone up your ass. So I did. And then we took a photo. It's online.
Like the phone in the dressing
room?
Dude,
if you look up online, Devin Townsend phone in ass, It's a picture of me in the back room of the Tonight Show with the phone up my ass. And so we thought it was funny.
Yeah.
You know?
Why wouldn't you?
You know, it's funny.
Yeah.
So then we left, thinking nothing of it. Then we went out onto the main, Jay Leno's desk, and we took pictures mooning in front of the desk. Great. We're going home. Anyway, next morning, phone rings. Management of the person who I can't bring up the name, who was just like, what in the were you guys doing? And I was like, nah, we played the show. Like, what? And he's like, I can't believe that you did that. And I was like, we didn't. He says, did you stick the phone up your ass? Why would you do that? And I was like, no, we didn't. I did. They're like, but they had the cameras, like all the backstage cameras were recording the whole thing. So they've got all this image of you with the phone up your ass, and now we can't come back. So we went out on tour after that for about a year and a half. Steve, by this point, was thoroughly confused with my guitar pick saying, don't use Jay's phone, right? Sorry, Chris. That was the best I can do.
You put that on your...
That was an anecdote.
You put that on your guitar?
Yeah, yeah. But that's an anecdote. What do you think of that?
It's a great...
See?
It's a pretty damn good anecdote.
Thanks,
but
man.
Let me just clarify this. You All put right. on your guitar
Fix.
Pick...
Don't use Jay's phone.
Fix that Steve's playing with it?
I don't think he... I think he gave up by that.
Were you playing guitar too with
Steve? Yeah. Do you know him?
Just briefly. And like whenever I've met Steve, he's been a perfect gentleman, but he's a rock star.
Yeah.
I don't know the real Steve.
Yeah, he's...
Like you do.
Yeah, he's cool, man. He's like, he's great, actually. He's really cool. But I mean, it's like, I don't think you can like be raised in that era and like go through those experiences and not have it color your personality, right? Like, I don't know, man.
Well, especially since, you know, he was, okay, so you're 44, but 10 years early, imagine if you had a 25-year-old guy in your band.
I'd hate him.
And I'm sure he was kind of the same, like, what...
Oh, dude.
I understand this guy because I was him once, but I'm not anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and now he's sticking phones up his
phones
ass.
Phones up his ass, taking a dump in my guitar case, right? It's like, they should
why did you take a dump in his guitar case?
I couldn't figure out how to communicate with him. I was like, I'm really upset here, yet our paths of communication have been blocked by months of dysfunctional interactions. So clearly, that's the only course of action is take a shit. But I mean...
did he yell at you when he found out?
No, he was just super confused. He was like, why would you, but why? But I mean, it's like, man, I don't know, dude. It's like, I feel like ultimately this whole process of like learning and like trying to figure out what I want to do and all this sort of stuff. I really think that I just like having fun with my friends. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure my kids are okay. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure my wife's happy. And ultimately, when I get older, man, I want to be surrounded by people who don't think I'm an asshole.
Right, right, right.
Right? So all this stuff that happened when you're younger, I mean, it's like, but I can't also, imagine you didn't have some
moments.
Well,
dude, too. Trust me. Like I said, that's why we mentioned this earlier. I'm not going to say the exact thing, but you, me, and Mike Inez from Alice in Chains have a very interesting text chain that we have because we're all a little bit warped.
Yes, sir.
Because you know why? You started when you were 19. Guess how old I was when I started? 19. Guess how old Mikey was when we got an Aussie? 22.
Right.
When you start at a young age, you think differently from the rest of the world. And that's not good, bad, and different. That's just the way it is.
Totally.
You know, you've been you were in a band with a record deal with Tonight Show and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Basically as a teenager, early 20s.
Totally.
Look back now. What the what did we know in early 20s?
Nothing.
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 Did you ever do drugs when you were a kid?
As a teenager, but when I first got in the business, I had a few issues.
That was me too.
Yeah.
And see, that's exactly what happened. Like, I didn't do anything. Like, I was sober as a judge up until after the Vi thing. And then I was like, clearly now's the time I start doing acid. And then I remember just at that point making just a series of terrible life decisions, right? That haunt me to this day. But, you know, I think that, like you say, when you start at that young age, man, it's like there's this combination of like insecurity and ego and all this.
It's interesting because whenever we have shows at Madison Square Garden with WWE, there's a way that you can go where you take a right and take a right and there's a lot of traffic and you go the right way. Other times, if there's too much traffic, if I take a left and drive the wrong way down a one-way street, oh, I've actually got a... Oh, Devin is here. Looks like he's actually... Is that him pooping in the...
No, that's the phone.
Oh, that's the phone. I'm actually looking right now at a picture of Devin with his phone up his ass. Thank you, Jeff.
Good to see you. So my ass doesn't look like that anymore.
So look up Jeff. Just Googled it, which is great.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, buddy.
That, see, there it looked like two elbows pressing together. Now it looks like two uncooked loaves of bread.
But I can drive the wrong way down a one-way street in New York to get to the guard. And no, if any cop pulls me over, they're going to go, hey, you can't do that. Oh, it's Jericho. Go ahead.
Really?
Yeah, because the New York cops know our thing. And when you are young and you start off, like, you know, being in Vi's band, you have a little bit of extra pull probably as a guitar player, as a singer, as a musician, because they know, oh, he's in Steve Vi's band, we'll let him in the club or whatever it may be. So it does kind of warp you a bit when you start at a young age at a high level.
Can I say something here? It's like, please, I do. Always knew that you did wrestling.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Right. I mean, and I know that you've got a lot going on. Mm. But when we first met each other and we were at the Golden Gods.
The Golden Gods, yeah.
My thought was, I like this guy. You're from Winnipeg, and it seems like we can talk, and it's cool. And it's only in hindsight now, like retroactively, I'm finding out all this stuff about you. There's one day that you were sending me texts, and Mike was sending texts, and I'm like looking on the phone and these images that we sent, these very classy images for those. But then I looked up on the TV, and you were on the TV.
Right.
You were doing like some talk show thing. And I'm like, but
he's wasting his time texting me. But as you know, dude, like, listen, if I text you with something fun or Mike did and you're on in 5 minutes,
yeah.
You would respond.
Of course.
You're on in 5 minutes. Yeah, I'm on in 5 minutes, but I got this first. You know, when you're a kid, you're like, I got to be warm up and get me ready. I don't know what to do.
Oh, yeah.
Now it's just like, yeah, okay, fine. I'll be on in a couple minutes.
Well, that goes back to what I was trying to say a minute ago. I mean, I really enjoy music and I really enjoy these things that I get to do and these creative endeavors that we go on. But ultimately, as I get older and with kids and all this stuff, man, it's like my I'd like to think that my identity is not so heavily invested in what I do, mm-hmm. that without it, I would cease to exist or mm-hmm. I wouldn't have cool people around me, you know? And I
right.
think that it seems like it's the same with you. You've got like people around you that you enjoy the company of and you've
That's
managed
what it's about,
to.
Though, man.
Absolutely.
Especially when you spend, you know how it is spending enough time away from home because you live in Vancouver still,
yeah.
or Vancouver area.
Yeah.
I'm sure you don't tour Canada a lot. You tour, Never. I mean, like I said, you're huge overseas in Europe and in England and all of these places. You're away from home. The only way to deal with that is to have people around you that are positive people.
And people that, yes.
Right?
Absolutely. And yeah. also people that in, maybe it's the same with you, that have known you long enough that you can use
yes.
as a litmus test to know when you're being an ass.
Sure.
You know?
Right,
it's
right.
like, I got, you know, guys in my band, I can look. I can, you know, things are happening professionally and things get more intense as time goes on, but I can always look at the guys and I can tell whether or not I'm mm-hmm. reacting to it in a way that's inappropriate, right?
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
This is Talk is Jericho.
When did you start realizing, or not realizing, but you started forging a name for yourself? Like I said, where you're in Europe and you're, or England and you're selling out Royal Albert Hall. Has this been for the last 2 years, 10 years? And what was it that got you to that point?
New management. I think one of my, in my Dungeons and Dragons thing, one of the things that has been, not a failing, but a liability of mine is my inability to curb my creative impulses. So if I have an idea, the compulsion to take that to its conclusion is such that everything else goes by the wayside. And for many years, I spun my wheels as a result of that. I'm like, I'm going to do this. Now I'm going to do this. Now I'm going to do this. And there was never any momentum that happened. I had managers at that point, but they were much more inclined to let me do what it is that I wanted to do. So when it became clear to me that the management was no longer pushing the career forward, I started looking for some new people. And I talked to a guy in a band that was doing really well. And I said, can you suggest a guy? There's a guy in the UK. His name's Andy Farrow. He does Opeth and a bunch of other things. And I think that he would be able to get his head around what it is that you mm-hmm. do. So I had him as a consideration. I talked to a couple other managers before him. And they had said to me, Devin, whatever you want to do is great. We'll facilitate that. Take it as far as you want to go. That's great. And I was like, this sounds ideal. And I met with Andy and he was like, I don't know what I'm going to do with you. He says, your finances are a mess. You've got no trajectory. You've got all this stuff going on. I don't think I can work with this. I don't even know where to start. And I'm like, yeah, but look, we've got all this, like, there's all this success over here. He's like, yeah, but there's no trajectory. And without that, you're not going to proceed. I'm going to have to go away and think about it. And I was like, oh, shit. And my first thought was like, well, this guy, man. Mm-hmm. He's not telling me what I want to hear.
Right.
And then he came back and says, okay, well, this is what we need to do. Musically, because you're so diverse with, you know, you've got a new age type record and a death metal record and a jazz record and then an orchestra thing. He says, we need to sell it more as the personality and rather than trying to categorize it as any certain type of thing. And if we do that, we can put it as like a ringleader or like the puppeteer thing, mm-hmm. or make the book or make whatever you're doing creatively fall under the umbrella of a creative entity rather than a band or an individual thing. Like the Zappa model is mm-hmm. what he was trying to go for. And as a result of that, now I've got a guy that tells me no. And for me, at first, I was just like, well, I never. I'm going to have to take a dump in something here.
You know? I'm going to have to stick some kind of a communication instrument up my asshole.
Any type. I'll take that. Dude, we got to do the thing at some point. We got to go between Ziltoid and Captain Spectacular. But that was it. And then all of a sudden, now over the past 8 years, Andy's got me on a thing. I'm like, I want to make a symphony. I want it to be a metaphor for power and sex and a quest for God that's futile. And ultimately, it ends this way. And it's going to be $1 million to do it. And we got to do it in an arena. And it's going to have 100-person orchestra, 100-person choir. And it has to be brutal. It has to be fundamentally unsellable. And it has to be all done in Icelandic. And it has to have my own language and all this stuff. And the whole point of it, it has to be incredibly expensive to make the point about where consumerism in music and art has led. And he's like, okay, but before you do that, give me 10 songs with choruses.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know what I mean? Like, so we just did it. We put out a new one, and it's a little closer to that goal, right? And strangely, it's moving forward.
But you know what's interesting to me? You mentioned like this is kind of like a Zapper. It's almost like a Steve Vai.
Very much.
Steve is kind of like whatever it was and how many dumps you took and phones you stuck up your orifices. You might have learned something from that guy, because to this day he still does basically what he wants to do within his brand.
Well, here's the thing about my relationship with Vi. When we were young together, it was a very challenging thing for both of us. But now the relationship that we have is like we're really good friends. Mm-hmm. And I'll be the first to say that I am incredibly proud to be able to, in some small way, carry on his lineage. Because in terms of people being a mentor for me, I don't think that anybody would come before Vi for me. Like, I've learned so much about what I want to do, what I don't want to do, how to manage myself financially, business-wise, all these things, both in the positive and negative, from Steve.
What a great relationship you must have, considering back in the day it was almost like a, like you said, like the petulant child. He must understand the genius that's inside of you to want to continue to help you and mentor you.
Well, I mean, thank you very much, by the way. I mean, it's like, I think that talking about failure again, bringing this back to almost mm-hmm. the beginning, for me, if I was to look back at all these times I did stupid things and did childish things to my wife or to my friends, to Steve, how would you go on? Mm-hmm. Like, that embarrassment sometimes of making such stupid decisions is such that I remember thinking, God, I'm a piece of shit. Mm-hmm. That was the mantra for a lot of years. But then when my kid was born, I remember talking to a guy who was maybe 20 years older than me, and I was like, well, what do I do, man? I've been such a jackass for so long. I'm so embarrassed when I look back at this stuff. And he's like, well, honestly, you just got to get over it. Because if you don't, then you're never going to proceed. You'll just become addicted to that sort of sense of, right, I'm a bad person. Mm-hmm. I am not worthy of love or success or anything. And so I look back at these things now and all these experiences, and my relationship with Steve, I think, reflects that more than anything else. Mm-hmm. You just have to get over it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
You've grown up and moved forward from that.
In some ways.
Quick question. It's interesting to me because we've never talked about this because we've hardly ever talked, but is this true? Because I've been putting a little bit of Sherlock Holmes together. So you did a thing that was never really a thing, but it was a thing with Newstead, Jason Newstead.
Yeah, yeah.
Irate,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
R8, like irate.
Yeah.
And at the time, Hetfield flipped out on Jason because he was doing stuff outside of Metallica. Was that the project that he flipped out on?
Yeah, but it could have been anybody. I think that it was inconsequential who was involved with it. I think the intention of Jason at that point was to try and create some sort of sovereignty from the whole Metallica camp. And I think that they were upset more at the intention rather than anything to do with the music.
Gotcha, gotcha.
Yeah.
But that's basically when they kind of told him he was gone.
Well, yeah, and in fact, it was like that whole... I did a number, I think five things with Jason in total.
Five songs or five different projects?
Five different projects.
Wow.
But it was during all that time... you know, our relationship was, it was fun. We had a good time together, but it was never really a real tight connection, I think, in terms of creatively, but it was fun. We were friends, right?
You guys were just jamming, though, basically,
yeah.
Right? It was never a record deal or...
No, right. It was just fun. But I think that as a result of that time being so tumultuous for him as well, I was privy to a lot of things about his situation that... that made it clear to me that it wouldn't have mattered who was involved with the project.
It could have been you. It could have been frickin' Johnny from down the street. It didn't matter.
Very much.
James didn't want him to play with anybody.
That's it.
Right.
But again, it's like you watch their evolution, and there's some people that are very critical of Metallica and the ways that they've gone. But I actually look at Hetfield, having never met the guy, as a very inspiring cat, because he seems to be an example of a guy who has put these... supposed failures or creative missteps to use in his own mind of saying, okay, well, look, this is something that I tried and this is what I learned from it. And I think that a lot of people can glean a lot of inspiration from that, especially at his level, you know? And yeah, man, Metallica, it's Metallica. I couldn't imagine being in a band for 30 years.
Right.
And still giving a shit.
Yeah.
You know?
With other guys.
Oh, my God.
It's just you. You do what you want, but yeah.
And I still have a hard time giving a shit about it. You know what I mean?
Give a shit about yourself.
Very rarely, right? So to be in a band and like, okay, God, now we got to be Metallica.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a whole thing that relies on us being Metallica. The fact that they're doing... things that may be construed as a misstep, like a movie or a festival or Lulu or whatever.
Yeah,
I mean, good on them.
For you, I mean, at this point in time, it's like you obviously call the shots and you've done such a great job in carving your niche. Do you ever go on tour with anybody as a support band at this point?
Oh, sure.
Who do you go out with?
Well, we went out with Gojira last week.
Were they the headliners and you're the... Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
In the States?
Yeah.
Okay.
The States has never
maybe
been...
Maybe the States,
a,
yeah.
Yeah, States has never been a big market for me at all, right? But I think... It's yeah, absolutely, man. And I think it's good for the creative process. Like we did, we were headlining festivals in Europe there. We doing like these ones in Finland. It's like 50, 60,000 people headlining it. And then we went back to Kingston, Ontario, like to 18 people. You know what I mean? But I think without that...
That's enough to keep you grounded,
you
right? Yeah.
And the best thing about that show in Kingston is because we couldn't get the gear up, I had to do it acoustic. And because it was advertised as not being acoustic, I had to stand at the door and tell people that it's going to be acoustic. And this girl came through. She was just like, what? Who are you? I don't care. I'm here to drink. And I was just... I felt like this is probably really good for my future creative process.
Listen, Devon Townshend, I don't care.
That's exactly... What's up? And she gave me the look like I was wearing her sweater, too. She's like, why are you talking to me, you asshole? And I remember, but literally, 4 days before, I was like, thank you, Finland. You know, it was like this huge explosions going off in the sky and everything.
We had a great night. Like we played Hamilton, Ontario. I remember Sass Jordan was backstage just rocking with us. And there's probably, you know, it's like one of them like Sunday afternoon festivals, you know. It's like Kim Mitchell's the headliner or something. Yeah. And there was 10,000 people and they're rocking. And then we got to get in our car and drive over to Windsor.
Yeah.
We played in front of 27 people.
Right.
Like you said. And I was like, we're never playing Windsor again until the next time when they offered us a big guarantee. Yeah. We're not doing it. We're not doing it. Guess how many times? There was 18 people that time.
That's good.
So Windsor, Ontario, we're never coming back to play for you. I'm
because
sorry.
Every time you say it, the guarantee gets higher. And then
and the people get lower.
If you're anything like me, then I feel bad for the people who give me the guarantee. I'm like, I'm sorry, you know.
And I feel bad for the people who showed up too.
Same.
Like there's nothing worse than like they're looking around like, wow, we suck because there's nobody here.
That's it.
This really sucks.
But I think ultimately, man, that's what makes it fun. And people have said to me before, you know, you put a lot of humor into your work. Do you think that's the wisest choice in something that you're trying to portray something of emotional significance to you? But just by the sheer nature of doing this for a living, it's hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
And if you...
Yes. You have to have tongue-in-cheek and have a ability to take the piss out of yourself.
You have to.
Because this whole business is ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
We know that.
Yeah. And ultimately, you know, people are dying and things like that at home. Or you know, your parents are getting older and all these things. None of this matters. if you're able to support yourself and your family and have some good moments, somewhere like some good coffee, even, you know, it's like you're good to go.
Like,
man.
Zoltan's Zoltoid's coffee beans.
Yes. But I think that's it, man. It's like, yeah, man. It has to be viewed with tongue in cheek, and I think that's why I enjoy your company, man.
Yeah.
Because I see that in
we know that we're just dudes. You know what I mean? 10 years down the line, who gives a shit about us?
Oh,
don't matter.
Even now, I mean, at least in my
10
point,
seconds right? From actually right now, I don't give a shit about either one of us.
I don't.
I could
did.
Even care less.
I did.
I did.
But now it's all over, man.
It's falling apart. As we wind down here, I'm just laughing. Can you tell me what your worst gig was and what your best gig was?
Oh, there's been so many.
Yeah.
Where would you even start? I mean, Kingston, Ontario. Was
That's a good one.
No bueno to begin with. Okay, let me answer this.
You're from Canada, you can't talk Spanish.
Wait, I did.
It was no good,
bueno,
eh?
No way.
It was no good, man.
Well, let me answer that with something that I'm hoping you can follow up on, because I can't remember.
Okay.
And that's what I was going to say, is a good portion of my job goes into forgetting the experience. Because when I get home, I can't drag anybody else into it, because no one has any perspective
right.
on it. You come home and you're like, it was mind-blowing.
Mm-hmm.
And people like, don't care.
Yeah.
It's Thursday. Garbage needs to go.
That's like, yeah, totally, dude.
So I'm just kind of like, so when I come home, I'm just like, I just want to eliminate the memories, right?
Right,
so
there's
been tons of awesome, like, mind-blowing experiences, and there's been tons of just brutal, soul-shattering, dark, yes. You know, the only thing on TV is Gummo-type moments, right? And it's like, but ultimately, man, we're still here, so hooray for lack of other job skills.
Let's briefly talk about your new record, Transcendence, man. And there's been so many versions of Devin. From I have Ocean Machine, I have Strapping Young Lad, I have Steve Vai, I have your cover of Sinner on some Judas Priest tribute record from the mid-90s. You might have even done something on Working Man, too.
I did.
Which one did you do?
I think it was Natural Science.
Natural Science.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
You have so many different sides of the coin to you, but yet Transcendence, it's very much the epitome of you, grandiose, a little Fear Factor, a little Zappa, a little Dream Theater, a little Priest. There's a lot of all your influences kind of wrapped in there. Is it still easy for you to put out these great records after putting out so many over the years?
No, I'm bored of it, and I think that's the biggest problem. And luckily, each record that I put out, I have to dig further to try and find inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
But man, I've been bored of this style for so many years, man. It's like that. It's like I created this sort of thing that people dig, and is becoming more successful the more we do it. And I got a great band, I got a great group of people. But it's, if I was to define it, it's like black era, black album era
Metallica
with like Def Leppard and Enya and some weird classical stuff over top of it, with like a ton of echoes and a logo that looks like a Pepsi commercial.
And
right?
Phil Spector production.
That's it. But you see, to keep mining that, to try and find inspiration, dude, I've been out of inspiration for that. What are you going to write about? Love? Come on. I'm 44. You know what I mean?
Married for 25 years.
Write a song about, I hate going to the bathroom in the middle of the night 4 times and I have to sit each time. But that's a niche market, right? So what I try to do now is I try and put myself out of my comfort zone to find things that inspire authentic emotional reactions within the parameters of what is still working. And to be able to do that, like with a record like Transcendence, where the theme was more giving up control and allowing other people into the creative process, allows me to have a record that I'm emotionally attached to, sounds great, keeps the thing going, keeps the motion going, and now I can go do my symphony.
Hmm.
You know, and I'm not phoning it in, but I'll tell you, dude, it's like when I was doing Ocean Machine, 22 years old, I'm like, this is all that I'm resonating with. But now, dude, like, I did a record last year called Casualties of Cool, mm-hmm. which is like this weird sort of horror folk thing. And I love that because that's where I was.
Now, what name was that under?
Casualties of Cool.
That was the name of the band?
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. And it's like, but that for me is great. I love that. That's where I was at. But to do DTP now, man, it takes a lot of effort. But the one thing I will say about Transcendence and all this stuff is it's probably the best it's been. And emotionally, I'm still connected to it, but it's not easy to be so anymore.
Mm-hmm. Is there going to be another Ziltoid record?
I banished him.
Oh, okay.
You know, because let me tell you a little story. When Captain Spectacular died.
He's dead?
He can't be, because my son freaked out.
Because you cut out the scream at the end.
He freaked out.
I cut a wicked. I was like, "Wah!" And that was cut out of the album.
But he freaked out.
Wow.
He freaked out.
How old's your son?
He's 10.
So your son loves.
At the time, he was 8.
So he loves Captain Spectacular.
And when he died, yeah. I had him in the studio, and he was like, "What happens now?" And I'm like, "Well, the Poozers come in that he named him because they're
that's the villains, the Poozers.
They're little bums because and
literally bums.
Yeah,
because, not like okay. Not out of work guys.
No.
Actual asses.
Depends on if there's another Ziltoid, right? But it was like I heard that the moon of Saturn was called Titan, and it had oceans of methane. And me and my buddy were sitting around drinking coffee, and we thought, what sort of creatures would live in that? Poozer is what it was. But when
I get it, Poozer.
He was sitting around, he was so excited. He had his little book and his doll. And then I was like, well, Captain Spectacular dies. And floodgates opened up. I was like, not really, though. He comes back.
It's just an illusion.
So, yeah, I'm currently waiting for the inspiration to strike right. again.
Well, if you need Captain Spectacular, my price is going to double this time.
Really?
Yeah, it's going to go from zero to zero.
Well,
just
oh,
you
my
know.
God.
To zero to double zero.
Can I tell you guys as well? Thank you, by the way. I said to Chris, I was like, dude, what can I give you to
you
do
You did offer me. I was like, what did I say?
You said you can either give me $1 million
uh-huh.
or you can just give me like some pictures
yeah.
on like a text thread.
I think it might... pictures on our Mike Inez, Devin, Chris text thread.
That's it.
Right.
Again, man, it's like...
I might have made the wrong decision.
I you know what? I of all these things that you've done and all these things that I've now retroactively seen you involved with, man, honestly, brother, thank you so much, dude. It was so much fun.
It's been a pleasure. And I think you're being nice. From my recollection was I think what I said in my mind was you can either give me $1 million or you can give me like an anal washing.
Oh, that's
what
true.
I thought you said, right?
Oh yeah.
So I didn't get either.
Yeah,
which is fine. But
that's
if
okay.
there's if you want Ziltoid 3 and Captain Spectacular is back, I'm getting one of those two things.
I'll tell you what, right? man. I've got a whole thing set up. I got the dice too, and I'll tell you what, man. I'll get them
the
loaded. So
dice.
Whichever side you want to be on, man, you get every time.
Last question, man. What's your favorite song to play live?
Oh God.
It's hard sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, some nights all of them, some nights none of them. I think on this tour, the song Failure is actually really cool.
Yeah.
Because it's the first song that I wrote with the band.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've been such a control freak about everything
right.
that I've done that the song Failure, I think, represents a paradigm shift for the band because we all contributed to that one. And to play it live reminds me of the fact that, you know, you can always keep learning, right?
Yeah. And it's always good to have a great team around you.
Essential.
Great team, man. Dungeons and Dragons and Dungeons coming to a middle-aged, emotionally dead human being near you soon.
Thank you, Devin Townsend. Captain Spectacular says good night.
Yes.
Ziltoid, you were always destined to be humanity's last hope.
All right, Devin Townsend Project is on the road right now in support of their latest ridiculously awesome album, Transcendence. They're in Europe right now. They'll be in the States starting May 6th for the second leg of the Transcendence Tour. I saw it back in Las Vegas a few months ago, and they were a tremendous band. What a great performer Devin is, and he's just a total whack job, which in a good way. And they're doing dates with Opeth and Gojira. It's a crazy lineup. It's a great lineup. So go check them out. You won't be disappointed. You get tickets at heavydevy.com. That's HEVYDEVY.com. Go check out my fellow Juno Award winner, Devin Townsend. Thank you so much for being here. I love the, you might have got Jason Newsted fired from Metallica. He'll always have that on his conscience. So go check out Devi and go check out the Transcendence album. You can get that on Amazon, of course. And if you do, please use the Talk is Jericho links. You can support Devin and your favorite podcast in one quick click. You find my Amazon links at podcastone.com. Click on the killer deals button in the top right corner of the page. Then hit the Talk is Jericho button. I got them Amazon links, USA, UK, Canada, A. Every time you use the Talk is Jericho Amazon links, Amazon kicks back a small percentage to this show to help us cover production costs. Buy anything you want, no hidden fees or extra challenges. Just go to podcastone.com. Click on the killer deals button in the top right corner of the page, then hit the Talk is Jericho button. You find all my great sponsors there as well, including DDP Yoga, 25% off all DDPY merch and swag. And if you buy a combo pack, you get a second one for 50% off the price. That's already 25% off. You know that one. DDPYoga.com/Jericho. Go to CISO if you want to laugh. Sign up at CISO.com. Get 2 months free with the promo code podcast1 at checkout, SEESO.com. Thanks for making the Jericho Network at Podcast One such a tremendous success. Also, don't forget about TrueCar. If you're going to buy a new car, your used car, and right back to the Jericho Network. Huge success with Beyond the Darkness leading the charge. It's scaring the crap out of everybody. Hundreds of thousands of people getting the poop scared out of them 5 days a week. Beyond the Darkness. Team Tiger Awesome, making you laugh every Sunday. Last week's Create a Super Bowl episode, which was great. You got to check that out. And of course, Killing the Town with Storm and Cyrus on Tuesdays. Disco Inferno was on this week, and ooh, the results weren't good. Lance was vicious, was savage on poor Disco. I think Disco became the big baby face in this. And of course, the flagship show, the big hit, Keeping It 100 with Conan. Conan, Disco, Inferno, KG, nothing is off limits. They cover it all. Aren't afraid to say exactly what's on their minds, their intelligent minds, their wacky minds, their Air Iran minds. You know, they're always doing some stuff on there, having a great time over on Keeping It 100. And this week, they got Ken Shamrock is going to be on the show, which is cool. You know, Ken fits in with those guys completely. So go hit subscribe at iTunes so you never miss a single episode of any of the great shows on the Jericho Network. We've got a lot more coming. Believe me, I got a lot more chomping at the bit. Chomping at the bit. Leave everyone a rating and review. We're recording the new Fozzy record as we speak. Go to Chris Jericho Fozzy on Instagram or on the Twitter at I Am Jericho to catch a couple snippets of a couple of the tunes. People are going nuts for them. They're great, great songs. You're going to love it. And you're also going to love Mick Foley, March 15th, 2017, 39 days and counting until the biggest podcast ever. Hard to believe we've been talking about this for almost a year, and it's coming true. It's coming. So you're going to love it. Thank you for listening today. Keep listening for the 60-second AP News headlines coming up next and coming up next Wednesday. That was my imitation of Cult of Personality. Didn't do very good. But it's not CM Punk. Sorry. It's Living Color, the band that wrote the song that CM Punk used to come to the ring. And what an interesting band there. One of the first African-American hard rock, heavy metal bands talking all about their experiences in the 80s. When they first showed up as a rock and roll band, they were directed to the rhythm and blues department of their record company. Still some crazy segregation type stories from them. Living Color, all four members are going to be here. Doug Wimbish, Corey Glover, Vernon Reed, and of course Will Calhoun on the drums. You are going to love it. They're great. Boy, they got a lot to say, and they're going to be here on Wednesday. I got a lot to say, and it involves this. Have a great week. Stay hard. Stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs. Be safe this weekend. And remember, always, if you're ever in any doubt, remember this. Yeah, boy!
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.